Welcome to the Runners Roundtable podcast. Season 4 is conversations with runners, and each episode will feature a conversation with an inspiring female runner who is making the running community better in her own way. In this episode, I'm talking to Julia Kov-Sachko about being a runner who is rooted in the following questions. Why not me? What else can I do as a human being? And where else can I go? Enjoy this conversation and thanks for listening. Welcome everyone to another episode of Runners Roundtable. We're in season 4. I am speaking to inspiring women from our very own running community. And these are women who are changing how we view ourselves as runners, changing the landscape of running. And today I am thrilled and maybe even in awe of my guest, who is Julia. I knew I was going to, I practiced it in my brain. Julia Kov-Sachko. And I'm hoping you're going to say it. And obviously you're going to say it better than me. You've got a whole lifetime of experience saying your name. So Julia, thank you so much for being on the podcast. And thank you to our mutual friend, Meredith, who connected us and who had nothing but great things to say about you in terms of how you are inspiring not only her, but everyone to chase big goals. And not only big goals, but goals that are probably very intimidating for a lot of people, myself included. So Julia, can you introduce yourself to us and tell us a little bit about how you got started with running?
Thank you so much, Stephanie. And I am Julia Kov-Sachko. I appreciate you trying my difficult Ukrainian last name. I have been running for 20 years. This October was going to be my 20th year since my first marathon. And I wasn't always a runner. I actually only ran for the bus initially, but I was inspired by watching the New York City Marathon at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, where I was once a patient. And after watching for maybe 4 or 5 hours, I was so inspired and so transformed. And a light bulb moment went off in my head. And I said, this is what I need to do. And my goal to get better was so I can have the strength, so I can have the stamina, so my body could take me to the finish line. And I too can one day wear that finisher shirt on my arm and show everyone in the hospital who's watching as I run by that if I could do it, you can do it. And that was the onus that I needed to get out of my wheelchair and to start focusing on getting stronger and stop saying, why me? Poor me. Life sucks. To why not me? Why can't I do this? Why can't I be one of those people? And it was the catalyst. It was the catalyst of my entire existence. And that was 25 years ago.
So that's, I find that the why not me is such a hard reframe for a lot of people to embrace, right? When we see something that could potentially be very scary or challenge us to move outside of our comfort zone, it is hard to change from the why me to the why not me. And how do you think you got there, right? Because it's, yes, you're watching the race, and I'll say for myself, I lived in Boston and every year we lived in Boston for 4 years. And every year I would go see the Boston Marathon. I would see the finishers and never did I think I could do that. It wasn't like I never thought that. I saw them and I thought, wow, these people are rock stars. I don't think that'll ever be me. And the reason I ran a marathon was because I entered the lottery for the Chicago Marathon and I got into it. And after I got into Chicago and I trained for that very first marathon, it was still, I couldn't believe it was me. And even when I finished, I felt like, I always liken the marathon for me personally, like being pregnant and giving birth, where training is pregnancy, the race itself is labor. And then when I'm given my medal, it's like being handed my baby. That's kind of the emotional experience I go through every time I run a marathon. But it never That wasn't my thought process. It was kind my thought process was very much so, well, if the universe wants me to run a marathon, I guess I'll do it. But that was me. So how did you get to that? Why not me? Because I find that to be so beautiful and empowering to have that thought for yourself.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I've always been someone who focuses on goals. I don't know how to exist without a goal. My goal is the driving force of what gets me up and gets me to do. I guess I'm type A. I have a checklist. I have to do everything on my checklist. And then when I approach to the end of that list, I make a bigger list. And goals have always been my driving force. That's just my type A personality. But it is the goal of the marathon. The seed was planted. That changed the trajectory of what I'm going to focus on. And I love to challenge myself. I love to do things that people think you can't do. You know, tell someone you can't do something, and that's the reason why you want to go up, do it, and say, look at me, I'm doing it. But it was just important to see the New York City Marathon, as you know, 50,000 runners. Well, back then, maybe it was 40,000. Passes by Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, and there's a lot of charity. And I'm sure Boston has that too. And when the Fred's team charity runners ran by, they got a great deal of applause. They got high fives and hugs and crying. And they had, you know, in their honor, big banners. And I asked, because I was unaware, I asked, who are these Fred's team people? Are they famous? And someone next to me said, no, they're running for us. They're running to raise money and awareness for us. And that's when I said, why not me? I asked God for the ability to get up out of my wheelchair and be able to do what they're doing because I wanted to give back to the hospital that I thought saved my life. And then in turn, I said, okay, I'm going to start learning. What is this about? How can I get myself there? How can I go from wheelchair to being on that side of the glass? Because for me, that would have meant that I left my cancer behind. And so I was doing everything in my power to get to the next level, but I was centered on myself. When I turned that little trajectory in my brain, the onus went to how can I help others? That was it for me. Once I started to raise money for others, once I said, I'm going to be part of Fred's team, that's it. When you really want to do something and you really have the desire to do it with all your heart, you want it, the universe helps you. Forces that you weren't aware of, faculties that you didn't even know you had come into existence. And I think that's when I saw the marathon run by with all the Fred's team people hugging and crying. And I said, okay. I want to do that. And that's what I needed. I needed to find a reason. And then when you find something you love, you want to do it all the time. So first I was walking around the halls, then I was walking around the hospital, then I was walking around my block. Before you know it, I was walking around the reservoir, which is 1.5 miles, and then I was running around the reservoir. You know, I started one block I walked, one block I ran. And then I got to the reservoir, 1 mile I walked, 1 mile I ran. And then eventually I was able to do the outside of the park, which is 6 miles, which to me was like running the Olympics. So 1 minute I walked, 1 minute I ran. Eventually, 1 mile I walked, 1 mile I ran. And eventually I ran for 2 miles. Unthinkable, completely unthinkable. And then I walked a minute. And then I said, okay, we're going to get the passion back and we're going to do it again. And I learned that the more I ran, the happier I got. The more I did, the more I was able to do. It gave me some kind of a power. When I was running, I felt like I was flying. And I wasn't running fast, mind you. My first marathon was 4:47. So I was running 11 minutes, you know, 10, 11 minutes. But to me, because I was so weak post-op, because I was so very, very, very weak, it took everything to just make it out the door some days. But I didn't give up. I had a reason. I had a goal. I was going to run the marathon. I was going to raise money for Fred's team. And I was going to run past the hospital where I could high five people and show others in there that if I could do it, they could do it. And that's what I needed. And that took me a couple of years. But I think the proudest day of my whole life was when I ran that first marathon. And it didn't stop.
What
You know,
year
it
was
didn't
that first marathon?
stop. Sorry?
What year was that first marathon?
2005. October. And like everyone else, you know, I'm sure you said the same thing. And everyone listening says the same thing. I'm only going to run one marathon. But then it becomes addictive because you learn as you finish and as you progress, not even as you finish, as you are training, you learn that you're stronger than you think you are. And you learn that you can do more than you can ever possibly imagine you can do. Remember the first time you ran 20 miles? That was like incredible. And so the stronger I became and the more talented my running skills became, the more I upped the ante. And then it was about speed, you know, okay, how much faster can I go? And of course, the next proudest moment of my life was breaking 4 hours in the marathon. And that was 2008. So three years later. And then after you break 4 hours, you think, oh, what else can I do? And so this just kept evolving. And my goals became focused on not just running, but what else can I do as a human being? What else can I achieve? You know, what else can I do that I never thought I could do? And that's empowering.
Yeah, it's incredibly empowering. And I'm curious what your support system was like during that time. And just in general, what is your support system like? Because I find that for myself, having a strong community and a very loving support system really does provide a foundation where I feel like my curiosity can grow, right? When I know that my husband and my daughters are cheering me on, when I know that I'm sharing long run, long miles with women in my community, it definitely makes me, again, just more curious as to like, so what can I do? So I'm curious, what was your support system like that? It seems like Fred's team has been, I love what you said about the universe, right? And the universe bringing all these forces to you. And it's, I just think of you sitting in the hospital and just kind of what are the chances that you were in the hospital that day? And I don't know the particulars of your cancer story, but it's like, what are the chances that you're sitting in the hospital on the day that the marathon is happening and that you're in a position where you can actually see it and then you can see the Fred's team and then you ask someone and someone responds to you with that, they're doing that for us, right? Like where you are in that position to get all that information for you. So again, I guess my question is just the support system for yourself and then even just seems like the support system within the running community, once you did start running and exploring how far you could go, not just mileage, but just how far can your body go with this thing called running?
You're 100% right. It was joining Fred's team that allowed me to believe that I can run that first 5K. First, I walked it, but then eventually I ran it. And it was meeting other people, like-minded people who wanted to do the same thing I was doing and who were supporting each other. We would meet on the weekends, on Saturdays in Central Park. And like I said, we started with a 10K. And then eventually, every week we'd meet and I'd look forward to seeing my Fred's team friends because they were just as innocent as I was. They didn't know what they were doing. But we had a coach and we had the support of each other and we had the belief in each other. And the runs became my therapy. I stopped feeling sorry for myself and I started focusing on raising money. We all help each other. How are we going to raise these $5,000? You know, this is 20 years ago. That's a lot of money. And I was young. I was, you know, very young. I was in my late 20s. I didn't have the resources I have now. So we supported each other physically by running together and by pushing each other and emotionally by supporting each other with little questions that we had. And you know what? The running community became my whole world. If I needed a new apartment, I would ask my new runner friends who's got a lead. If I needed a new job, I would go to my new runner friends. Okay, I'm looking again. And we all supported each other. We all helped each other. And we had a great coach, of course. And that enabled me to pursue my own coaching goals. Because after that first marathon, I thought, well, I can do so much more better. I learned. So I kept going to certifications and the next coaching program and the next coaching program so I could be the best runner I could be because I'm a goal-oriented person. And then after maybe 10 marathons, my running friends were coming to me and asking me, Julia, how did you drop an hour? Help me. And that's how my running coaching started. I just wanted to give back to my runner friends because if I can do it, surely they can do it. And before you know it, I was running also not just for me, but so I can run with my friends. My friends wanted me to pace them, so I started pacing them. My friends wanted me to create a training program that could help them in the same way that I helped myself. So I went to a certificate program and I got a coaching certificate and I started helping my friends. And it was just passion, love of what you're doing, figuring out what I loved and then helping others find their passion. Through helping others, you know, through helping someone achieve their goal, you achieve yours. So my support system were my running community. And that's why I love pacing. Stephanie, I love giving back to the running community.
Yeah, I'm noticing very much so a pattern of giving back, but also a pattern of the running being greater than you, right? Where the running is, yes, you're doing it and you've got goals for yourself, but it's also your running is very much so, I feel like a beacon of light for others of, here I am doing it because I want you to know that you can do it as well. And that I am here to support you in doing it however it is that you're doing it, because it's thinking of, you know, to kind of simplify the story, right? Simplify the story so that people can grasp it. It started off with you being a cancer patient and seeing the New York City Marathon. And from there, it's planted this seed of why not me? Let me try. And the amount of patience that I can only imagine that took of, okay, today it's one block, or even as you said, it's run a minute, walk a minute, run a mile, walk a mile, slowly building that up. But we go from cancer patient to someone who starts running, to someone who runs a marathon, and then to someone who begins to walk alongside people and coach them through their own marathon and running experiences, right? That's kind of, I feel like I'm simplifying the story here.
But no, you're 100% right. That's my trajectory.
Yeah.
I'm trying to condense it for you, but somewhere in the middle, running went from something I did as a hobby to someone I am. And it happened over time. It happened over 20 years. It didn't happen overnight. But the more and more I went in, delved deeper into the running community and the passion that is my running passion, the more and more I became myself. I learned that I wasn't happy in my career anymore. So my running was my side thing. But it went from my side thing to my main thing. In 2008, which most people remember in New York City, was a terrible, terrible time. For me, it was actually the greatest time because I lost my high-end career that I'd spent 15 years building, and I found myself with time. The precious gift of time allowed me to think, well, what do I really want to do? Do I want to sit and work for the man 60 hours a week and have no real purpose? Just, I did my job well. I got promoted, I made money, but I didn't feel satisfied. When I was running, I felt satisfied. When I was with my group of runners, I felt like I was in a community that I belonged in. It felt like coming home. I didn't feel that going into the office. So in 2008, it was because of my years of running and my passion flourishing inside me, I decided to be bold and I went back to school and I studied something that I believed in, something that I valued, and something that I can help others with. And here I am today. I transform myself because of running.
And it's also just the why not me mentality. Again, right? Like it's not because we're talking about 2008, a very, very challenging year for a lot of people financially. And you took that as an opportunity to pivot into something that you were passionate about. Again, like the strength of that questioning of, why not me? Whereas there might have been a lot of people during that time that, you know, for lack of a better word, but still very appropriate because it's been in the ethos now, right? Like where in that time, there were probably a lot of people who were languishing because they kept asking themselves, why me? Why now? Right? Like where they weren't able to pivot in that time. And I think it speaks more to, again, your story of believing in yourself enough to try, right? And the question I have there is, how can we all do better at that?
Well, that's a great question. And I think for me, it's pretty easy because I was forced to deal with my morbidity and my mortality. And when you're given that opportunity to look death in the face and you say, what do I want to leave this life with? What do I want to create for myself? I was given a second chance. And when you're given a second chance, you grab onto it, you hold onto it tightly, and you run with it, metaphorically, literally, spiritually. I was given a second chance at creating something for myself and being proud of myself and feeling like I have a sense of purpose. And I think we as people all want a sense of community and a sense of purpose and a sense of belonging. And running has given me that. And I should also tell you that I met my husband, then boyfriend, at a marathon. And so that was another thing that running has given me. Running has given me so much that by giving back to running, I feel like I'm fulfilling my life's mission, my purpose. But I think I lost your question there by telling you that I pivoted and met my husband, then boyfriend, at a marathon. And
no,
he proposed to me at a marathon, and we got Mauied at the Maui Oceanfront Marathon in 2014. So if it wasn't for running, I wouldn't have met him. I wouldn't have changed careers. I wouldn't be who I am today.
And I think it's such a powerful thing here too. And I feel like I'm going to say that word so many times throughout this discussion, because I'm such a firm believer in the power of running to transform. It's not, for me at least, and I think it's similar to you, it's not just running. Like, it's not just I'm putting my shoes on and I'm doing this thing. Like, no, no, no. There is a difference between running being something I do and running being something I am. I am a runner. I am a better human when I run. I am a better human when I give myself the time to run so that I can be with my thoughts. Like, I think of that for me, running is, and I'm going to kind of bring the yoga piece in to you for you as well, right? I would always tell people, I'm like, running is another form of moving meditation for me. Like, it's not 100%. Just the physical when I'm practicing yoga or when I'm meditating, yes, but running is another form. There is something so, for me at least, soothing about hearing my breath when I'm running, or tuning into the sound of my feet, or when I'm running very early, hearing the world wake up, hearing the birds start to chirp. And I'm in Miami, Florida, and yesterday on my run, it was parrots that I heard. And I'm like, how is it that we're all just like, people are in their cars and no one notices that we have parrots just flying around and calling or whatever it is that they're doing? And I thought of that, of how running allows me to be more present to those often overlooked moments. And there's also this week, and I'm sure you've seen it, right? We have Kelvin Kiptum who recently passed away. And that's something that I've been thinking about. Just, we're not really guaranteed anything, right? We're not guaranteed another moment. We're not guaranteed another run. We're not guaranteed tomorrow. We're not guaranteed the goal that we've set for ourselves for the fall. We're not guaranteed any of it. And that's something too, that I find that when I run, I am able to be a little more present to what is my body doing? What are my thoughts? What is my experience in this moment? So that running isn't just running. It's not just left foot, right foot, repeat. It's actually a moment of being fully present with myself that I don't get. I really don't get it throughout the day. I have to be very intentional about it, of like, okay, let me take a moment here. So I think that is something very powerful for you to kind of share, that it's, whoop, those are my notes that fell. That about running and how I feel like, I guess what I'm trying to say is that I hear what you're saying and I feel what you're saying in terms of what you give to running is exactly what it gives back to you if you allow it to be. And that's where some of that belief in yourself comes from, of believing in yourself enough to show up and try.
1,000,000% agree with you again. I always tell people that my running is my me time. It is not wasted time and it's not extra time. It's time that I focus on and I write it into my calendar, and it's just as important as anything else. And it's my me time. I don't listen to music. I'm weird. I don't even run with a Strava. I don't want any technology. I just want to be alone with my thoughts. And some people go to church and some people have running. That's my synagogue. That's my temple. To me, it's my moving meditation, and I'm grateful because you know where I come from. I had to relearn how to stand, how to walk, and eventually I taught myself how to run. And every day I get to see the sunrise. It's meditative. I love to run first thing in the morning. I love to run without music. I love to run without any distractions. It's my time to think and be grateful and to talk to my mama and just to write my book and to contemplate about everything in my life. And life in general, I love that time. It's precious time that I feel is not wasted. And I feel that it's necessary for me, like you said, to be a better human.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I've come to love about running's place in my life, is that it has become a non-negotiable for the people in my household, right? Like, mom's on a run. Okay, we don't call her. We don't message her. We don't bother her until she comes home. We don't comment on what she's wearing, what she's eating, like none of that. So for me, oftentimes when I think of like, why do I run? It comes back to that sense of freedom that I have, that freedom to simply be myself without having to carry the roles or expectations of being Stephanie, of being a woman, of being a mother, of being a wife, of being a friend. Like, I don't have to do any of that. I can just be with my breath. I can just be with my feet falling and my effort. And that to me feels like such an incredible gift when we do live in a world that is constantly battling for our attention, where there's so much that's happening. So I'm curious for you. All right, so we have running, run coaching. When did yoga come into the picture for you?
Well, actually, I found yoga before I found running. When I was diagnosed with a brain tumor and I was told that stress was probably the reason I got sick, I learned about different breath work. And I went to go seek to see how I can bring myself back into a state of homeostasis where the tumor can't thrive. I was working in finance in those days, and I'm in New York City, and it was the 90s, and it was a very fast-paced world. And I was going to graduate school. I was working full-time. I was partying because it was the 90s. I had a completely different world than I do now. And I found yoga as a way to calm myself. I started going to yoga classes. I started focusing on my breath work. And every night I would practice at yoga in with other people. And at home, I would practice visual imagery and I would practice all kinds of affirmations. I kept telling myself, I am healing. And I found Wim Hof and I learned to hold my breath. And I learned to stand on my head because I read that it would give me a little bit more ability to heal. So anything I read about that could help me, I would try it. It's a good thing I didn't read somewhere that horse manure is good for you. I was willing to try everything, anything to get me to get healthy again. And yoga was one of the things I learned first. And I was already getting treatment when I saw running. Like, running didn't come into my sphere until 2 years later.
Yeah. And it's So I ask about the yoga because we know yoga teacher, yoga practitioner, runner, run coach. There's another thing that you focus on with the body. Can you share a little bit about that with us?
I am so happy and honored to say that for the last 14 years, I have been a licensed massage therapist, and I've done it both in New York and in Oregon. And I love it so much because I focus on runners. It's only because I went into a massage therapy place because I was dealing with a hamstring injury, and I learned about massage. And the more I got into it, the more interested I became in it. Well, this is so great for me. Maybe it can help somebody else. So like I was telling you, in 2008, when my hedge fund closed and I had all of a sudden time and money on my hands, thank God I got severance, I went to massage school because at that point I had already been a client for 3 years. And I believe that that's how I stayed injury free, because I kept training and training and training because I'm pretty detail oriented and I wrote myself a plan. And every day I had to meet my plan, even if I was injured. At that time, I didn't know better. Even if something hurt, I went out and I kept doing my run. So I went to a massage therapist pretty regularly, and she would fix me up and allow me to go running the next day. And so I believed in it so much that when I had the time, I wanted to study it. And at first it was just my side thing. I thought I'd find another career in the industry that I was in. I figured after the market corrected itself, I'd find another hedge fund. But after I took my boards, after actually I did my coursework and I started working on people, in New York State, you have to have 15 hours of clinical rotation before you can sit for the boards. And so I started practicing on my friends, because when you're a runner, you have a lot of runner friends. And
I would volunteer immediately.
Runner friends all volunteered. I went to my Saturday run with Fred's team, and I said, "Hey guys, I'm practicing massage therapy and I need people to work on." And everyone lined up. And after I took my boards in 2010, then I already had a slew of people I was working on. Then I started charging. It was still my side thing. But little by little, she told two friends, and she told two friends, and she told two friends, and little by little, it mushroomed. And then I never went back to finance. I never needed to go back. I'm so happy that I get to do what I love, what I believe in, and I get to help others find freedom in their body. And people actually pay me for it.
That's the best when that happens. But I also, the reason why I wanted you to speak to that is because of the holisticness of how you view being a runner, right? Of knowing that, yes, you can run, but then you also have to, in yoga, right? With yoga, you stretch and you breathe and you find stillness. But then also in the massage, I mean, I personally love massages. I get them as frequently as I can, because I feel like a massage is a love letter to my body. And it is a love letter, especially I did it last year when I was training for the London Marathon. I told myself, I'm going to make time each week to get a massage. And that for me, let me tell you, that training cycle was the most fun I've ever had in a marathon training cycle. And I do think it's partly because I made sure that there was 1 hour a week, and I had the privilege and the ability to do that, but there was 1 hour a week where I was just surrendering. I was on a bed and letting someone else massage, but then also like move toxins or just move whatever stiffness I had in my body around. And that was by far my most favorite training cycle ever, because for as hard as I worked, that massage helped me feel like I was saying thank you to my body for all the hard work that she was doing for me, because my brain was doing that. So I find that when I think of you, it's like this trifecta of movement and of being in the body that really honors the body's needs for intensity, like through running, for softness through yoga, and then for surrender through massage. And I'm curious if that's kind of how you see these three practices come together.
You are in my brain. It's exactly how I view it. Since I had an opportunity to do a do-over, I only studied things that I valued for myself. It wasn't about how can I make money? It was about what do I find nourishing? What do I believe in? What do I find invaluable? So for me, yoga was the yin to my running yang. Breathwork was the key to my finding strength to keep going. And meditation was the key to me continuing because, you know, when you do something repetitive over and over and over again, you have to find something in it to keep yourself from being bored. So I combined the three components. If I got regular body work, I didn't get injured. If I focused on my breath work, I found energy. If I kept running consistently, I found more freedom in my body. So it, for me, it was everything to come together to create the PR moment, which I'm also very proud of, where I ran so fast for myself and so effortlessly that I felt like I was floating. I kind of was on the balcony looking down at myself, like felt myself, but I felt like I was outside myself. And it's because I put those three components together. Like you said, I focused holistically on every part, how I ate, how I slept, how I breathed, how I did self-care, how I focused on not just the training, which is important. Of course, you have to put in the miles. If you want to do the work, you will see the results. But it was all the other components that I put together that allowed me to run so effortlessly, where I felt like I was in flow. And that's hard to do when you're at mile 22.
Yeah.
I didn't want it to end. It worked so well for me. And the better I liked it, the better I applied myself to it, the more I wanted to study it. And it's cyclical. The more I wanted to study it, the more I wanted to teach it to others. They say, if you really want to learn something, teach it to someone else. So then I started to applying it to my clients and my friends. And then the more they asked, the more I get more certifications. And it was like a wheel that kept going. And that's exactly it. I created a career for myself. I created a life for myself of things that bring me joy.
And I think that is, not only does it take bravery to do so, because it sounds like it's quite a big pivot, right? We're talking about going from finance to something that is very community oriented and like running. I mean, I don't know about you, but I can speak to myself of, I didn't even know this could be a career, right? Like I thought I had to go to school. I mean, I went to school, my major was psychology, and I went to school to be a mental health therapist. That's, I mean, it's still very much a part of who I am. It does play a lot into, you know, these podcasts and these discussions. And when I talk to my friends, it's very much so there, but it's also, oh, I didn't know that being a run coach was a thing. I didn't know that hosting a podcast was a thing. I didn't know that I could host retreats. Like there's this whole running industry that I had no clue existed. And I also just didn't even know I could exist within it. And it really did take me taking a chance on myself. And again, I feel like now that I'm sharing all that, I'm like, oh, so my question wasn't so much a why not me? My question was a what's the worst that can happen type of thing, right? Like, let's give it a try and see what happens. But I think at the root of that is very much so a passion for not only running, but the running community. And it is an understanding that running is something that has shifted my confidence in myself. And that is something that I want to gift to everyone. Like I'm a firm believer that everyone has a movement modality that really speaks to them. I really do think that, like, I just want everyone to try running. And if people are like, but I don't like running, I'm like, well, find a friend. Like I will die on that thought of we're all one connection away from falling in love with this sport. That's my thing, where it's like that one person can change everything for us if we're willing to make ourselves vulnerable enough to find that person. So, okay, I want to come back to something that makes you especially amazing. And I'm going to lead with the question of how many marathons have you ran?
303.
303. And what is so significant about that number?
Ever since I ran my 100th marathon in 2013, I thought at that time that that was the furthest, I mean, the most elusive club, the most elite club that you can possibly be a member of, the 100 marathon club. And I thought, wow, I had gone to the next pinnacle and I've become. And then I learned on that meeting, when I got the place in that club, that there is another club called the World Mega Marathoner Club. And to be a member of that club, you have to have 300 marathons. At that time, 10 years ago, I never, ever thought I could ever reach that. But that's what running does. It gives you power to see where else can I go. It transforms who you believe you are. And I met others who have done it, my runner friends that have done it. And I thought, well, if they can do it, I can do it. And so 10 years ago, I set out for this crazy goal of joining the World Mega Marathoner Club, which I just did. And now I am the youngest woman in the USA. And that is amazing to me that, well, of course, the first marathon is amazing. The first marathon you ever do is amazing. But to run 100, I thought, okay, that's the pinnacle. But now 300 Marathon Club, World Mega Marathon Club. And I, believe it or not, I still have to pinch myself, am the youngest member in the USA. That's like incredible to me. And I'm so grateful for it. I'm not saying it in a boastful way. I'm saying it in a, I can't believe that this is real. I have to pinch myself kind of a way. And that's why I'm so grateful and so happy that running has taken me here. And you never know where running is going to take you. And I mean that metaphorically, spiritually, you know, in every way possible. Running transforms lives. And like you, I tell everyone, I help people get started. I help so many people get started, even who don't want to work with me. I tell them, find a coach that resonates with you and get yourself moving. There's joy in movement, and movement is cathartic, and sweat is cathartic. And even if you go out running with a friend, just go out there, just put one foot in front of the other and see where running can take you.
So I didn't even know that list, that club existed, but you posted about it and I was like, holy smokes, you know, that is, and that's why I started off the episode by saying, like, I am in awe of you. I am in awe of you because I, for me personally, and I know there's, for me personally, the marathon is very, very challenging. But I will preface that by saying, I know it's challenging for a lot of people, but I will also say that part of what makes it so challenging is I don't doubt my physical ability to do it. What I always question is my mind. And that's the part that gets me with marathons. It's not so much, can my body do it? I really do. I love this body of mine. And I believe in this body of mine enough to know that I will, that I can finish. The thing that always feels like the wild card is my mind. So as someone who has ran 303 marathons and who I'm going to assume has had varying experiences with marathon running, what are some of the mental, because I, again, I think physically, and I love that you said, whether you work with me or not as a coach, like, yes, because there is a coach for everyone. There is community for everyone. Go find it, go create it if it's not already there. So I love that you say that because I think there are some elements to training. We can, you, I mean, listen, there are a ton of people who self-coach themselves and who do great, right? But I think a part that we don't spend enough time talking about is that mental side of accomplishing these big goals or accomplishing the journey from start line to finish line. So if you had to give us some words of wisdom from your 303, I'm sure, incredibly unique marathon experiences, what would you tell us when it comes to the mental side of it?
I think everyone who's run a marathon knows that the marathon doesn't begin until mile 20. And that is when it's all mental. Whatever you tell yourself, you believe. Whatever you focus on, you find. And I say focus on the journey, not the destination, because joy is found in doing the activity, not in finishing it. So I focus on each mile at a time. When it gets challenging, I remind myself of somebody who is right now struggling in her wheelchair, looking at the marathon and saying, I wish I had the strength to do that. And then I run that mile for her. And then my next mile, I run for my mama, who I miss every single day. And the next mile, I run for my mentor, who I'm hoping that keeps inspiring me to keep reaching higher. And then the next mile, I dedicate to someone else. And then, so the last 6 miles are always more about mental. Whatever you put your mind to, you create. Whatever you tell yourself, you believe. And so I tell myself, I can. I tell myself, I will. I tell myself, I am. I don't tell myself, blah, blah, blah hurts. I don't say, oh, how many miles are left? I say, thank you for each mile. And I focus on the mile I'm in. And I do a lot of breath work. And I try to find that state of flow, because running is a gift. And if you see it as a gift, you will enjoy it. And if you see it as a chore, and if you focus on your big toe that's in pain, that's what you bring more of. It's an energy. Whatever you throw out into the universe, it's a boomerang. It comes back to you. So I practice gratitude, and I meditate, and I dedicate miles. And more importantly than anything, have fun. This is a hobby. I love to look for signs. One of the best signs, I was pacing a marathon earlier last year, and one of the best signs I saw, it made me laugh so hard, I almost spit out my goo. It woman was holding a sign, said, don't be a whiny little bitch. And it was exactly what I needed. I was pacing a group of people, and it was a little challenging. And I just needed to read that and then just smile to myself and say, I can do anything for 3 miles, guys. We got this. Because when I'm pacing, I'm so focused on my group. I'm so focused on the time that I sometimes need a distraction. When I'm running by myself, I'm good at meditating.
Yeah.
When I'm running alone, I'm good at getting to my mama and talking about my book and talking about the things that I value. But when I'm pacing, I'm focusing on my runners. I'm reminding you to drop your ears away from your shoulders, rather to drop your shoulders from your ears. Yeah. I'm reminding you about form. I'm reminding you that in half a mile, we have goo on the left coming up. Everyone grab it, you know? I'm calling out my mile splits. I'm so focused on my physical every step that I needed that outside levity.
Yeah, and I think it's just to kind of summarize what you said in a way, right? We're talking about the marathon. And yes, for those who I feel like we see it all the time, right? That the first 20 miles is training, the last 10K is all heart. And what you're saying is that it is, because at that point, it is mind and body working together to keep you moving forward. And I find, like, I always think that training is what creates that belief that I can do it. And then race day, I try to tell myself, like, that's the victory lap. That is the celebration of months of consistency, of months of dedication, of months of, honestly, sacrifices, right? Sacrificing, you know, Friday nights for, in my case, it's sacrificing Friday nights, you know, Friday movie nights with my family, because I'm going to bed early so that I can wake up early on Saturday. But there is the element of, you know, your breath work. And I say this oftentimes in my yoga classes, where try to steady your breathing, because if you're breathing steady, your brain is going to get the message that you are okay. And then your brain is going to send the message out to the body that the body's okay. If you're breathing like, you know, like, you're going to start to create panic in your body. Whereas if you're breathing deeply, you're going to find you know, that relaxation response. You're going to start activating different systems in your body. So it's, there's breathing, there's an acceptance element to what you said as well of, hey, at that point, you know what, everyone's going to hurt somewhere. Something's going to be talking regardless, but we accept that that's part of the experience and we keep it moving forward. And then also just the reframing of, it's not that I have, oh, 6 more miles to do. It's, oh, I get to do the next 6 miles and I get to be in this mile and I get to use this mile to dedicate it to someone or something that is important for me. And I think those are all such beautiful things of not only bringing us back into our bodies, but also just bringing us back into the moment. Because I know, again, for me and some of my marathon experiences, there's that dread of like, how am I supposed to make it through the next 6 miles? And oh my goodness, and I don't know if I can keep moving forward. And it's like, you can, but the moment it's having to shift it into, and I get to do this. And again, it goes back to what you said. It's the, why can't I not make this a positive experience for myself versus why am I suffering right now? Right? Like it's just like a little bit of changing words of that why not me mentality of yours of why can't I make this something that is reverent, that is full of gratitude? And I feel like, again, I think that when we're talking about marathons and those long distances that we so often downplay the power of the mind and the power of the heart to keep us moving forward. So I really, really appreciate you saying that. And as someone who's done 303 marathons, I'm going to say you're kind of an expert on this, you know, like you kind of know what you're talking about. So I want to ask you 4 more questions. And this one is because you've mentioned it a few times. Are you writing a book?
I'm working on something. Okay. I have had so many wonderful stories that it would be really awful for me not to pen it and share it with others. Like you have this wide audience and I don't really have, I have a small niche. And I feel like I have so much to offer with all these experiences that I have been able to present to my little niche. I feel like if I had a bigger audience, I can inspire more people. I can help more people get started with running and use something within their own lives to inspire them to move forward.
Okay. I'm like, I need to ask about that because I've ran 10 marathons, I think it's 10, and there are lessons in each of them, right? And each of them that are so unique to those experiences. And sometimes the lessons are practical, like walk through the water station, you know, sometimes it's practical like that. And then sometimes it's greater than that. It's the reminder that, I mean, my Marine Corps marathon, y'all, if you've listened to it, you know it, that was very much so a marathon that I ran, and it was a lesson in grief and in my ability to continue moving forward with my grief. And this reminder that there is no time limit to grief. There is no, like, grief is grief, and it might be with you for a very long time. But that race was a reminder that grief is something I can still move along life with. It doesn't have to stop me. And I'm like, okay, running. I didn't expect to learn that lesson at that race. And yet that's something that's made that particular race so incredibly unique. So I can only imagine you have many, many lessons to share. And I think it's a testament to not only the human body, but it's the human spirit. And it's truly a lesson in what can we accomplish when we believe in ourselves? What can we accomplish when we take away the limitations And we take away, honestly, the fear of something like that. When we believe we can and we move into it with less fear and more courage. So I hope you do that. I hope you do create your book and that even it ripples. It's very much so like what you shared about the massages, right? Like that person told two people and then those two people told another two people and then another two people and then another two people. And that's really, again, very much so a part of your story of how everything has rippled from your love of running and how it just continues to grow from you in ways that you could not have anticipated or maybe even predicted. So that's the book. Okay, can you tell us where we can find out more about you? Where can we follow you? Where can we just learn more about Julia?
You can find me on marathonmassage.massagetherapy.com. That's my website. And from there, you can either book a session with me or you can just read about my marathon journey. You can find me on Instagram, Julia K. Garling, or just hashtag PacerJulia, which I believe is the only one out there. And same with Facebook, Julia K. Garling. Garling is my married name. But you can pretty much find me at any marathon because I run about 20 marathons, 24 marathons a year, and I pace most of them. So any big marathon out there, by the way, I was just in Miami 2 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah. See, that's how I know, because you were pacing the, I believe it was the 215 group for the half marathon, right?
Yes, very good. Yes, I pace a great deal. Whether I'm running a half or a full, I see it as very important work that is not wasted. It's not just a training run. It's an opportunity to make a difference. I believe you can't go through a single day without having an impact on the world around you. And what you do matters. And then you have to decide what difference do I want to make? Well, I want to make people feel better in their bodies, so I massage them. I want to help people feel more confident and more powerful in their bodies, so I do running coaching. And I want to help people just feel better in their bodies, so I help them become, I create an environment where I allow you to shed your armor and be true and authentic, whether you're on my table or you're in the park with me or I'm pacing you in a marathon. I'm rooting for you and I want you to be the best version of yourself. And that's a difference I want to make.
Yeah. And that's a beautiful difference. What do you have coming up that we can celebrate you in?
Oh, this year I am going to be doing another crazy thing. I'm pacing all the world marathon majors again. So coming up, I have Rome, then I have London, then I have Berlin. I'm pacing Berlin for the 50th anniversary, which I wouldn't miss. It's also my 50th birthday, so it's in sync. Then I have Chicago, which I've been working hard on this one. Chicago, you might know, is the 312 area code, and I'm making Chicago my 312th lifetime marathon because numbers are important to me. I work backwards to get to that number so I can be the 312 in the 312 city. And then, of course, my hometown race, I'm pacing the New York City Marathon again. I'm grateful that this is going to be my 15th year, which will make me something special, will make me a legacy runner, Stephanie.
I love, just love all of that. And I am a sucker for numbers. I truly am. Like there's magic in numbers, just like there's magic in words. And I do. It's whenever I see a bib, the numbers speak to me. It's either good, like a number where I'm like, oh, this is a good one. Like this is going to be a good experience. Or if not, it's numbers where I'm like, okay, we're going to get through this one. Like, so I love that you have that added goal of 312 in Chicago. And Chicago's just beautiful. It's a wonderful city. So, okay. Final question that I have for you is, what are your final words for us?
That's a big one. I think part of the challenge of the marathon is pushing yourself past what you think is physically possible. And marathoning is so much like life. You can always do more than you think you can do. So believe in yourself, trust yourself, go out on a limb, do the thing that is hard. It's the hard that makes it the great. And then when you do it, you might surprise yourself. You might say, oh my God, what else can I do? Always do the thing that is hard and always do the thing that is going to challenge you because that's what's going to grow you the most. And enjoy yourself. Enjoy and celebrate every single milestone.
I don't even want to say anything else. Julia, thank you so much for joining me today. Everyone, we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
There's a big difference between running being something you do and being a runner. I hope this conversation with Julia left you questioning who you are as a runner, how you give back to the running community, and how you find all the ways to believe in your own greatness as a human who also happens to be a runner. For more on Julia, give her a follow on Instagram at Julia K. Garling or at the hashtag PacerJulia. You can also check out her offerings at marathonmassage.massagetherapy.com. You can reach out to me on Instagram at The Cookie Runner or through my website at thecookierunner.net. You can also support this podcast with a rating, review, or a share. Until next time, run happy, run strong, and run true to you.